This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 367, brought to you by iFanboy listeners like you. iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 367. I am Josh Flanagan, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello. Happy New Year, Josh.
Thank you, Connor. And Ron Richards, to you as well.
Happy New Year.
In jail.
We're rusty. I'm already rusty.
I don't like I'm scared. I don't know what to do.
I know. At iFanboy.com, it's a website that we made because we like comic books. We read them, which is why we like them, or vice versa. Every week we read a bunch of them, and one of us picks the one that they deem the best book. They call that the pick of the week. We write about it here on the website, and we talk about it on the podcast that you're listening to right now, along with other stuff, other books from the week, some questions, things that come up. Before we get going, we are going to talk about what happened in the books, so there will be spoilers. If you're worried about that, either read your books and come back later, or... send yourself down hell's dusty road.
All right.
Wow. Hell's dusty road. iFanboy in 2013.
I didn't realize what the stakes were there.
You're putting a lot of pressure on.
They're surprisingly high. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you wouldn't think so, but you know, there it is, black and white. Ron, you're the first pick of the year. I'm sure that made it all the more pressure, and you went with an X-Men book by Bendis.
Well, yeah, it was inevitable. Really? I mean,
well, you know, I see that for you.
I mean, it was funny because I talked about it in the review up on the site. You can go to ifanboy.com and read that. You know, like a lot of people have asked me, like, what do you think of Bendis' X-Men? What do you think of X-Men? Et cetera, et cetera. And ultimately, I'm like, you know, it's going to be fine. You know, it's not like it's hard. Whether you like what Bendis has done recently or ever or something like that, it's hard to argue Bendis' track record as a writer.
Like he's quite accomplished.
Yeah, I mean Daredevil alone, I feel like he's earned, you know, our respect regardless. And so going into this, you know, like I doubted that there was going to be any massive, you know, sweeping change or sweeping difference or anything like that. The question was just going to be, okay, well, what was he going to do and how was he going to do it? And I've been a little, not hesitant, but, you know, cautious going into the four issues because he was clearly taking the Ultimate Spider-Man slow burn kind of approach for this, for the first couple of issues. You know, there wasn't any big bombastic first issue or anything like that. Like, it just kind of, and actually, as I've kind of noticed this really feels like reading old school or old style Claremont X-Men, because like I don't get a sense like that this arc is over. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it just each issue flowed into the next, like they should with monthly comics, if you ask me. But so it wasn't until this issue where after the fifth issue I was like, all right, I'm in. He did it. I'm on board. I like what's going on here. I like what I'm reading. And
it wasn't until this issue, really?
Yeah. Well, no. Well, because it was not like the other issues I hated or anything like that. But this issue was the one that put me over the top completely.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting because it seems like you've been on board since issue one.
I have been. I mean, no, don't get me wrong. I haven't. But what I've been saying is I've been saying that, hey, you know, I'm curious what he's doing. I like what's happened so far. And then I've been very complimentary of Immonen's work. But in terms of the greater, grander scheme of things and what's going on, this was the issue where I said, you know, all right, cool. I feel like it's clicking. I'm on board. I want, and not that I wasn't on board before, but like
you've
now
been glad handing
yeah.
us.
Yeah, well, I'm not glad handing, but
I think we need to talk about this sort of lie. No.
But anyway, one of the things that made me realize it with this issue was that I now believe and I get that not that I didn't believe it before, but I get that Bendis is taking the right approach with the X-Men, which is a little bit of reverence of the past, of highlighting the connections of the characters, and that, you know, I know we say that kind of soap opera-y kind of feel, but the interpersonal relationships of the characters, as well as that idea of being feared and hated and not fitting in and that whole thing, because that's what the essence of the X-Men are. The essence of the X-Men is that awkwardness around your body's changing, your life is changing, you know, the allegory of puberty, but in this regard, mutant powers. And the idea being that you're scared and alone, and then you find people who are like you, and then you find acceptance amongst them. And
I thought it was about being gay.
And with this issue, we got a huge kind of nod.
All day, Richards.
A huge reverence of the past with the little telepathic kind of conversation between Beast and Jean Grey that happened inside Beast's head. When Beast, who – now, I will question the story point of Beast revealing to young Jean Grey everything that happened to Jean Grey in her future. I feel like that's messing with the space time.
Sure. That seems like a specious decision.
Here's everything. But, so we got that touch of the past. But then I also felt as if, and with just the one small scene where we see present day Scott Summers trying to recruit a new mutant, that sense of, okay, this is somewhat going to return to what made the X-Men great, which to me, reading the X-Men growing up and being a fan of the X-Men, was that idea of, okay, here's this, you know, this group of people who banded together because they're mutants, and every now and then new mutants pop up and they go and recruit them and they train them and that whole idea. And if that's the direction they're taking these books in, then I couldn't be happier. And that subtle scene, whereas the past four issues have been big fights and explosions and things like that, but this was just two pages or three pages of Cyclops talking to a new mutant. Very quiet, very subtle, and I like the idea of Scott's team and Wolverine's team now are going to be racing to recruit these mutants, very similar to how Xavier and Emma Frost and her, you know, kind of Hellions, that kind of played out back in the 80s. I just like what I'm seeing, and this issue just kind of cemented it. And again, to highlight Immonen, just killing it on this. I mean, like I said in the review, I kind of want that double page spread of Jean getting her past as a poster to put up in my bedroom.
Only kind of, or?
No, maybe more than kind of. And that's the thing that it
maybe I already ordered it anyway.
Yeah, maybe. But that's the thing that it touches upon is that the fact that, like, reading this, I feel like I felt as a kid, you know, as a teenager reading the X-Men again. Like, this idea of a bigger world around me and stories that I don't even know that are going to happen.
But it has the feeling, and I was reading X-Men back then before things got weird after Claremont left, but if it has that lighthearted feeling where there's danger and there is things, but it's also has a very strong family connection.
Yep.
You know, this is a family as more than any other superhero team.
Yeah.
I gotta say, not long into this, I really feel like Bendis' strengths play stronger into this than they had perhaps with the Avengers, where he tried to do that, but it sort of went on for a really long time.
Yep.
Whereas sort of the conflicts, the interpersonal conflicts of this are much better suited to the way that he works.
Yeah.
I think. And I think that's showing very quickly.
Yep. So the big change in the book that I didn't mention in my review only because I couldn't find a place to put it in terms of my narrative, but Beast, who is suffering from, you know, his mutation continuing and mutating, as now younger Beast helped him to work through this mutation, and now he's evolved and we say goodbye to the Frank Quitely Beast style. Say hello to
until he shows up like that in the book in 2 months from now. For
exactly.
No,
say hello to more of a, I feel like more of a Hellboy.
Looks like more of an ape.
Yeah, he's more of an ape. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so
I like it more than the cat, but
yeah,
that was the only element I didn't love about it. Yeah. You know, I found it interesting that he sees himself as the first Blue Beast in his head, and not as the human Hank McCoy.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Which I love that design. I love that design. I prefer Human Beast, but I do love that design, and the way that Imminent Threat like was fantastic. Beast.
Yeah.
I'd be fine if he'd gone back to the original Blue Beast, but I didn't love Ape Beast. I'm sure I'll get used to it, but it was better than the weird Cat Beast that we've had for a while. Cat, horse, donkey, whatever they, however they've been drawing him.
Cat, horse, listen, donkey.
Listen, he's blue. You know, what more do you want? He's blue.
It would be curious to see how long they will stick with this original five team being in the quote unquote present.
Well, yeah, and honestly, the question that it begs is what does it mean for the timeline? Like, do we have the divergent? You know, like,
well, they've already put in the bomb for that. Xavier will mind wipe it when they get back.
True. Yeah, I know they have a way to undo it, but the question is that until that is undone, you know what I mean? Like, what we know about time travel. You know, shouldn't they leave Xavier's the school or the Jean Grey school, and Salem Center has got a big casino in it? Like, shouldn't, like,
well, they're not fine
with that.
Yeah.
That's only one divergent timeline. If they go back to exactly the point that they, you know, there's a billion divergent
timelines. Right, but they go back with the knowledge of the future, and so wouldn't that affect their choice? Wouldn't that affect Jean Grey's choices now that she knows all this stuff?
Here's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
They're going to go back to the same point that they left, but Jean is going to make the choice to mind wipe everybody else and not herself, and she'll know.
There's your out, yeah.
That's it. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. All right.
Because her powers have been increasing rapidly as the needs of the issue progress.
Yeah, yeah.
She will also have the almanac.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
And Hank McCoy will just collapse. But no one will know why.
But yeah, no, but absolutely love it. Looking at the Jean Grey double page spread, it's just like I remember all the moments that they're calling out here, and the costumes and the.
But even if you don't, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
No, here's the thing is that I wrote a letter to Marvel and I said, I don't know what any of these things are. I want my money back. And then at the end, I wrote, butthead.
You just need to know that she's gone through a lot of shit.
Yep.
And you can see that you can see it here. I probably can call out a quarter of these.
Yep.
Specifically, I don't know what the one where she's sort of walking in the tall grass with a hood on. I don't know what that is.
That's from the Adventures of Cyclops and Phoenix when they traveled into the future to raise Cable as a baby.
Exactly. So all I know is she went somewhere weird and has a hood on, and Cyclops looks like Ishtar, and that's fine.
Yep.
I don't need to know exactly what that was to enjoy this story, and that's fine. I think this is a really great introductory series. This continues to be a really good introductory series to the X-Men.
It's great. It's fantastic. So well deserved. So. Yeah.
Now, can either of you tell me what happened in New Avengers number one?
No.
Okay.
No. Well, I'll tell you what happened. Jonathan Hickman released a number one issue that I didn't really get or like, but I'm going to read the second one because I might like it then in retrospect.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, that's pretty much exactly
that's
how it felt.
Exactly what happened.
I was more perplexed.
So this is a Black Panther book.
I was more perplexed by Black Panther's costume. His mask just kind of fades in and out as needed. When did that happen?
I don't know. I don't know when this takes place. I don't know this has to do with the other book of Avengers that the author is doing.
And there's a manifold in here that's not the manifold in Avengers.
I have decided.
He's white.
I have what? That's right. I have decided that if I was at Marvel, my rule would be that you can only write one book from a line. You can't have two Avengers books. You're going to have two Avengers books. It's got to be different people.
Well, right. I mean, well, from what we understand and what as it ended here is that this book is going to be the Illuminati book, and Avengers is the big cast book. So you've got Cap.
They're going to intersect.
Yeah. So the idea, and from what Hickman told us, or at some point, or I don't know when and where, might have been a private conversation, but you don't need to read both books, but if you do, it enhances. Like that's the kind of idea.
It's exactly how FF and Fantastic Four works, and I wouldn't want someone else to have written FF while he wrote Fantastic Four.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I guess I'm going with more of what would happen with Bendis before, and what I sort of had a flashback of here, where Bendis is writing three different Avengers books and
trying to do three different things, and
There was no point in buying the other one.
Now I understand that, and I agree with the apprehension on this book, but what we know of Hickman and what we know of his meticulous planning and his charts and graphs and his notebooks and his insane scribbling, I, like you guys, I was underwhelmed by this issue.
What I know about this was a very strange number one issue.
Yeah,
I looked back a couple of times, like, this is one, right?
Especially knowing Hickman's preference of approaching number ones, you know, and like what he did with Avengers, stuff like that. This was the slower, you know, approach to the first issue, and that's why I'm kind of reserving judgment. But I trust him.
You know? I was about halfway through this issue, though, and I was like, I don't know what's going on.
Wait, we got to spend 15 pages getting introduced to these Wakandans who are then killed by people we don't know.
Yep.
And then some Avengers show up at the very end, and they're not – they don't seem like the same people from the other Avengers book that came out last week written by the same guy.
Yeah.
All right, let's do this.
Yeah. So we'll see. Yeah. But I think we've learned enough from Hickman to trust them, at least through the first four, I think. Yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah. We'll see. But, you know, who knows if this is going to be more like S.H.I.E.L.D. than like Fantastic Four. We don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll give it four automatically. I'll definitely give it the next one, and then we'll see. Right. But
I'm glad it wasn't just me. I was so afraid. You both were going to be like, it was amazing. And I'd be like,
oh, no.
Did you read?
Oh, no. Yeah, I finished it, and I definitely scratched my head. It was definitely
odd. I feel so much better about that. Thank you.
Yeah. So so the other new number one this week was Morbius the Living Vampire number one, which place your bets now on how many issues this will last.
Eight.
That said, I enjoyed it. I mean, it doesn't really.
That has nothing to do with it. I would have just told you based on the title.
Yeah, exactly.
Joe is not Mark Waid.
Right.
And I don't mean that against him. I just mean the market.
Yeah. I really like Richard Elson. I like the issue of Spider-Man he did, and I liked all the stuff in Journey to Mystery he did. And I like this a lot, art wise. Yeah, the story was good, although it seems like they want to ignore Morbius's age, the fact that he's been around for a while, and they're kind of making him a little. I feel I got a younger
Marvel
feel.
Now.
Yeah, exactly. But
that's
fine.
I mean, they just told his his origin. You can sort of place it that way.
Yeah. So, but
I haven't read it yet.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry.
All right. Well, yeah. No, I enjoyed it. Josh, Connor, did you read it or no?
No, I have no. I could. I was trying to think of a character I would be less interested in. More of
it's Smythe. It's the only Spider-Man character I'm less interested in. Alistair Smythe.
Well, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. So
Dr. Druid, maybe.
Yeah. I'll stick with it until it gets canceled.
He's a whiz with AV cables, though. So that's kind of cool.
Only if the book is about him setting up people's home theater systems.
Which is awesome.
Dr. Druid's home theater service. I'm down with that. I'm not sure, and I didn't have to pick, so I don't have to say. I think Daredevil End of Days number four may have been my pick of the week.
Really?
I love this book. This is like the thing is, I'm a hot and cold on Bendis. You guys have heard me. I've talked about it today. But this reminds me of like the guy I fell in love with. But the guy's work, who I really liked, it just takes me back to. It's fun. It's like a fun Daredevil story. I like the mystery. I like hanging out with Ben Urich. I think it looks great. Like, it's just a really good looking, and I don't know what's going to happen.
I feel like 70% of this is Ben Urich.
Yeah, maybe.
Just knowing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying.
Ben Urich was some of the best, one of my favorite parts of his run. Talk about getting a character and all that stuff. I thought this was great. So, yeah.
And it's a fun character and a fun little world to spend time with. And what's great is that it's not in continuity. So, or maybe it is. I don't know. But, you know, whatever it is right now, like it can be like an Elseworld. So you're actually getting a chance to do it. Felt like, you know what it felt like? It didn't feel so much like Daredevil as it did feel like when I was, you know, reading Alias.
Yeah.
That kind of anything can happen stuff with it. And just, it looked really good. And it brought me back, like, in a way that you were talking about, you know, with the X-Men. Like, this definitely brought me back to a different time in comics. It made me really, because it was written back then. Right. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
A lot.
Cool. I'm enjoying the whole series. I think it's great. I think it's. I mean, I'm loving the art. I'm loving what Sienkiewicz and Jansen are doing on it. And it's just. It's like you said. It's kind of falling back into that Bendis Daredevil world that we loved all those years ago. So it's a nice little trip down. I'm curious to see how it ends.
Well, they were just like the choices in the story were just a little bolder. Like, you know, hookers who dressed like superheroes. Like, yeah. I was like, okay, this is the stuff that Bendis doesn't get to do on the stuff that we see him most of the time, and mm-hmm. that he's good at.
Right. Yeah. So we had a little hiccups in comics, in the comics world, as some stores had books the week of New Year, between Christmas and New Year's, and some books were released, and we didn't get a chance to talk about them. So I want to take some time to talk about them now. And the big one was Amazing Spider-Man number 700, the big last issue of Amazing Spider-Man before it relaunches as Superior Spider-Man, and the final wrap-up to Dan Slott's grand Dr. Octopus Peter Parker mind swap story.
So it was interesting. I was going through my bookshelves, and I went to look at my Amazing Spider-Man omnibus, and I realized it had burst into flame. And there were no more Spider-Man stories.
Everything has changed, Connor. The timelines are divergent now.
But there are no, and the thing is, there's no historical preference that this will ever change.
Precedence?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Or preference either.
Did I say preference?
Yeah, he did.
Rusty.
I mean, it was hysterical. I tweeted over the week after I read it. Because basically, so the in a nutshell, this is going to be tough to explain to anyone who's not reading it. But so Dr. Octopus swapped minds with Peter Parker. Dr. Octopus's body is in atrophy and is about to die. Peter's trapped in it. This is going to be Dr. Octopus's grand last supervillain moment, and he will have Peter Parker's younger, stronger body and can go on and continue. Of course, Peter fights back, and they fight and they tussle, and Peter gets some of the other supervillains to help him because they think he's Dr. Octopus.
Have you watched Out of Sight recently? Because you've used the word tussle several times.
No, I haven't actually.
And there's a great scene with the word tussle.
Anyway, so they fight, and then Peter is constantly working on some way to get his mind back into his own body, and he thinks he has it by using the same gold Octobot that Dr. Octopus used, but Dr. Octopus had already planned for it, put in some shielding, and so therefore Peter was unable to get his mind back into his body. But somehow, some bit of Peter's, all of Peter's memories are still in his body, and a bit of Peter's essence is in there, and Peter was able to push his life experiences in front of Dr. Octopus's eyes in the matter of a second, and everything that Peter's been through, and Uncle Ben, and getting the powers, and Uncle Ben dying, and Gwen dying, and Captain Stacy dying, and Dr. Octopus realizes what it means to be Peter Parker and what it means to be Spider-Man. And so when Dr. Octopus's body dies with Peter Parker's mind inside of it, Doc Ock swears that he will learn from Spider-Man and he will be a better person and he will be Spider-Man, but he'll have his genius and his ambition and he'll be an even better Spider-Man before, and he'll be a hero, he'll be a superior Spider-Man. And that's how it ends.
So clearly, we'll never see Peter Parker
again. Ever again. And so my response when everybody was freaking the fuck out was, haven't you people read comics before?
I'll give you this, though. Dan Slott has a massive pair of clanging bronze balls.
Yes, God.
I mean, like, he went through with it. I never felt like it wasn't a thing that wasn't going to happen. But it's a fairly large change on a group of people who are not so into change.
Right.
Further from a market standpoint, he's actually made his book less accessible. So really, and on all fronts, he just said, fuck it.
Yep. Well, it's hysterical. If you go listen to the Word Balloon interview he did with Suntress, like he's been working on this since issue 600. So this is his grand, Slott's big grand moment. And I'll give him credit. Like I talked to a lot of people who just hated this issue, thought it was awful.
It wasn't awful at all.
And I thought,
it's a bit long for what it accomplished, just like the ones before it. Like,
yeah.
He's doing 5 pages of material in 20 pages.
Yeah. I mean, but I think he hit some of the notes, like the moment where Peter kind of almost dies and sees everybody in his life and stuff like that. Like, he hit the right emotional notes for what should happen. I do agree with you. It did run a little long in the tooth, and some of the back and forth between him and Doc Ock was kind of confusing as they were, because everyone else thinks that they're who they're supposed to be, but they know that they're the other person. And so, like, I was like, oh, God, this is tiring. But yeah. But I like it. I say, fuck it. Burn it down. Bring it on.
That I'm 100% fine with.
But they're not burning anything down. This is just a story they're telling. It's
right, exactly.
It's a story that got told in Batman. It's a story that's got told in other places. It's not like it's I feel like comic readers are goldfish sometimes.
Wait a minute. Batman's back broken. It was broken in Azrael's Batman, right? I mean, that's stuff.
Well, yeah. Batman since the
1990s. He was killed and lost in time.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, Superman died, right?
It's a story. It's how is Peter going to get back is the story they're now telling. It's not like, this really frustrates me.
Yeah.
Mostly I'm frustrated that I want to read old Spider-Man stories and now they're a bunch of ash in my bookshelf. How do they know other books burn?
It's amazing. It's like some sort of trigger mechanism.
The really cool thing, though, is if they do change it back in the books, all your books reappear.
Yeah. my prediction is that within a year, Peter's back.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
so. Sure. That said, if you haven't threatened to kill Dan Slott, you I shouldn't joke about that. And no. you are on board with Spider-Man, and you didn't read Avenging Spider-Man number 15.1. You probably should check that out, because that was a very nice little character study of Doc Ock, and kind of gives more kind of background to what he's doing and his motivations as the new Spider-Man are, as we get ready for Superior Spider-Man, which is coming out next week or this week. Or
Avenging Spider-Man is when you go to a comic book convention and you're out with a bunch of your friends, and it's like 1 a.m. and you turn around and there's that guy who you don't know, and he's been with you all night. What are you still with us? You still hanging out with us?
I was going to say the surprise of the year is that that book's still being published.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Oh, you're still – who is that guy? What's he doing here? You said that one funny joke back at 4 p.m.
Yeah.
No
one cares about it.
No.
I mean, it did in the beginning when it was Madureira, but no one – I mean, I've enjoyed quite a bit of it, but it doesn't sell. I'm surprised. I think they kept it around for this reason particularly.
So it turns out that companies other than Marvel publish books this week. According to this list.
Justice League 15 started and Aquaman 15 started the Throne of Atlantis crossover, and this is the first issue of Justice League with Ivan Reis on art. And what a difference a new artist makes in this book.
Tell me about it.
Because, for me, Jim Lee's a great artist, but he's always been a bit stiff, and his characters always lack a little bit of warmth and humanity to them. I remember the first page here where you see Ivan Reis draw Clark Kent. He actually looked like what I think Clark Kent's supposed to look like in this book.
I think the more important thing is that you had Ivan Reis or Ivan Reis or whatever you say his name, but inked by Joe Prado, and that's it. Yeah. Like it's a condensed. This is the creative team on it. They've been great on Aquaman, and it's just continuing into this. It was such a difference, such a refreshing difference. That double page spread of the tidal wave and this is doing comic art. You let an artist and an inker, or sometimes not, but let them focus and do the book, and this is what you get. You get quality. Should have been this from the get go.
The thing about it is, I thought Captain Marvel was joining the team based on the cover.
I totally had the same thought. I was like, oh, finally.
Apparently being in the back of the team picture in the cover meant he's still just in the back of the book as a feature.
Know your place, Captain Marvel.
I like that as a design element.
I guess. I mean, if that's what they're going for, it's kind of clever.
Yeah.
I would like to see him on the team, though. I think it'd be an interesting addition to the team, but...
You know what? I feel bad because talking about the team, and not to quote Mean Girls, but I feel like they would just quit trying to make Cyborg happen. Because it's not happening. Like, it's just nothing against the character. But
I would not recognize a Mean Girls quote if you just stolen that outright. So I'm just saying, in the future, just go for it.
Well, he doesn't really do anything.
He doesn't do anything
positively or negatively on the team. He just is there.
Kind of tortured. That's all that I ever got.
Yeah, tortured daddy issues, and it's just like, oh god. It's, yeah.
So the story.
You guys get enough of that with me.
The story that part two is in Aquaman 15 is that a bunch of missiles were fired into the ocean that pissed off the Atlanteans. Now they're invading the surface world, and so that's the Throne of Atlantis story so far.
So
and
now here's the question, though: are you supposed to read both issues? Let's say I'm not reading Aquaman.
It says
to be continued. Nothing on the cover that indicates this at all. Although at the end of the Justice League issue, it says to be continued Aquaman 15. But the beginning of Aquaman 15 says nothing about go read Justice League.
No, but it does say it's Throne of Atlantis part two.
It does say part two. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I don't know. Do you like Pelletier on Aquaman?
He wasn't as bad as I was, and I didn't think he'd be bad because I've seen him before. But I knew it'd be a tough loss losing Reis.
Yeah.
Reis's pieces. But he was fine. He's a good.
I like Pelletier. I like him.
He's a quality comic book artist. So, yeah. But I thought this was a good story. I thought that it's similar to Namor when Atlantis attacks.
And it very much had that Namor feel to it.
And then Aquaman gets caught in the middle and he doesn't know which side to do. So I like the characterizations. I think the art changes helped a lot.
Yes, agreed. Totally agreed. It feels focused. It feels so.
I really did enjoy these two issues quite a bit.
Cool. So the holidays are over, and hopefully you got everything you wanted. But if you didn't, go to ifanboy.com/Amazon and buy it.
Woo.
That's what I did.
Yay.
Your gift cards.
Exactly.
Or those things you waited to see if anyone would get you, and no one bought you Fury Max Volume 1, so you had to go buy it yourself.
Exactly. Or in my case, the Alien Artist Edition that I just bought for myself. Yeah.
It's gorgeous, isn't it?
Right? That was good, right, guys? That was the one thing I got you both, because I figured it was, yeah. So
magnificent. I want to leave the call right now and go touch it.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. So go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon banner, and anything you buy at Amazon helps out iFanboy in the process. We thank everybody for your support. We had a huge December, and we want to thank everybody for that. You help keep the lights on here at iFanboy. We appreciate it. So, all right. So Invincible number 99. Josh, I'm dying to hear what you think of this.
I don't know. Like, yeah. was it a cop out or there what was no less?
So basically, every page was a splash page.
So it was homage to Superman 75.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, there was no panels.
Which I don't think anybody got.
I did.
That was complaining about. I got it too. Yeah, but
I mean, no, I got it as a thing that you do. He did make sure that. I don't want to say make sure, but there was a lot of dialogue. There was a lot of talk. Like the thing, it moved the story forward. It didn't take any less time to read than a normal comic book.
Yeah.
I suppose it was easier to draw because you didn't have to lay it out. It's like a thing where they have to make the story thing happen in issue 100.
Yep.
So this issue had to happen in the middle of it, and it didn't really need to because we're at the same place we were at the beginning. Right.
So might as well do something fun with it and do a splash page issue.
I wish it was a little more impressive.
That's the thing. I saw people hating on it. I'm fine with it all. With the whole splash page issue. But there were some pages, and it was all Otley, right? I mean, it wasn't like the Avengers getting nine different artists in and stuff like that. But there was the one page where Dinosaurus throws Invincible against the building and he lands, and it was really kind of lightly, almost sketchy kind of.
I noticed that too.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, well, that's unfortunate. But yeah, but you're right. You're right in that this issue had to happen until they get to 100. So yeah.
Yeah. But it was the panel thing didn't bother me, but the fact is, like, at the beginning we're at the exact same place we're at the end. So
yeah. You have a big problem with that really lately.
Well, what's the point of reading the issue?
Yeah. True. That's a good point.
And from a story point, that's a pacing problem.
Yeah.
You're just reading it.
So, but in terms of interesting art choices, I was all ready to tear into The Flash because it had Marcus Toe on art instead of Manipal.
Right.
And then I got to the middle of the book when the art switched back to Manipal in this amazing, amazing stretch of pages.
Yeah. No, it was almost like they did literally inject the Speed Force into the comic.
Yes, exactly.
In that, you know, Marcus Toe is the official fill-in for Manipal, who does probably, what, 9 issues a year?
About, yeah.
And he's fine. He's just, you know, he's a standard comic artist.
He's sticking to the look, you know, like the faces, the way Manipal draws, like the pointy noses and things like that. But it lacked that Joy DeVere,
Marco Rudy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean he's fine. He's a good storyteller. Yeah. It's all fine. But then the specialness goes away. But then when we went into Barry's head, when he's knocked unconscious and put in a coma, and it suddenly switches to Manipal, it was like literally the Speed Force being injected to the story and the character, which is what was happening.
It was like the moment, like going into color in The Wizard of Oz. It was just like, I was like, oh my God. And so what they did was, it was this the series of double page spreads, and you've got Barry, you know, in the hospital, and Patty Spivot and the other dude like kind of waiting for him, and he's all bandaged, and in his head coming out there are three different kind of lightning bolts, one with like a yellow hue, one with a red hue, one with a blue hue, and it continues on to the next page, and then the red one kind of goes away, and then the yellow and the blue continue on, but then more from being just lightning bolts, and they're very kind of, you know, angular, triangular kind of panels that make this whole big lightning bolt, and they morph into the DC Comics presented The Flash lettering, which is just amazing. It just I love the merging of visual storytelling that Manipal and Buccoletto are doing with these with the stuff, and so like once I got to this point, I'm like, all is forgiven, I'm fine with it. So yeah, it was great. Yeah.
American Vampire 34 is the last issue before the hiatus that's happening with this book for however long it's going to be on hiatus. But for me, the most impressive part of this issue was that it was a really strong indicator of tone and mood. It was a sort of a one-shot story about the Great Traitor, who was, I guess, maybe the new villain or maybe not.
It's the villain from Tremors.
But I thought that the mood and feeling that was created by Rafael Albuquerque more than anything was really strong. It just felt sort of somber, and it had that. It had this feeling that no other book really had, and it's hard to place your finger on what mood is, but it was. It was the heavy, the shadow, the fisheye lens through the door. It was nice. It was just a lot of great panels in this book, and it really just looked beautiful. Yeah. And I'm gonna miss it while it's gone.
Fair enough.
I thought that I would update on Hellboy and Hell Number 2, which many people told me I was wrong about.
Yep.
You're wrong with the first one, they said.
Yeah, it was again, it was kind of fine. I figured I put my finger on what it was I didn't like about it, though. And it's the same thing with this one. Literally, what it is Hellboy is following around a spirit in hell, and the spirit is pointing things out to him. And Hellboy doesn't do anything. And this was a lot more clear as to what was happening. There were some really interesting things to set it up, but that is still the only thing that happened. It was Hellboy following somebody around, and he's like, well, look at this. Look, this is where you were born. Look at this. And something may happen eventually, but nothing has happened because they're just walking around.
I like this new trend of 2013. And Josh wants action. Josh wants things to happen. That's what I'm picking up.
Oh, a thing does have to happen.
Right. No. Yeah.
And you know, like,
well,
what do you read Hellboy?
Conversation is still a thing, though.
Yeah. Character moment and all that.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. But like, literally, it's the character following the other one around. That's not using the comic book for. You have Hellboy in hell.
Right.
A thing should happen. It's just not using your you know, we all might want to sit around watching pro athletes talk about things, but most of the time people just want to see them play football.
So now, what was the thing that happened in hell previously that we all loved in Hellboy?
What was the thing that happened in hell recently?
Like hell had a reaction to what Hellboy was doing up on the surface world when he was a young boy.
Pancakes.
Yes. Which is a great segue to Glory number 31. Because
stick your arm deep in the hole and grab something.
Because I was delighted to see that in a very Hellboy-esque kind of moment, there were two food moments where basically what happens is that Glory and her sister, after they fought, are now going to confront their father. And I was expecting a big fight. And first we get that the little I forget the character's name, but the guy with the little monster guy who made grilled cheese on the plane. And then they arrive and see Glory's father and Glory's sister's father, and he starts making them waffles. And instead of fighting, they talk over waffles.
Are they in Belgium?
No, I don't know.
Because they started out in France. It would only make sense that they would go to Belgium and then have waffles. That's only a point off. But
it was a nice pace change from the brutality and the big fights and stuff like that to like, oh, they're going to sit around and talk over waffles. I love it. And earlier there were grilled cheese sandwiches. Excellent.
That's nice. He was hungry when he wrote that.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. Yep. I have figured out Karina Becko and Gabriel Hardman's secret to Planet of the Apes Cataclysm with the fifth issue.
And that is?
Unruly ape mobs.
That would be a good equation, I think.
Apes will form an unruly mob at the drop of a hat, and it will lend instant danger to a situation, and apes just cannot be stopped from forming angry mobs.
Yep.
it occurred to me.
They did it in Flash, too.
Yeah, yeah. Angry mobs are the new jackbooted thug of comics.
Well, if you take the continuum of angry mobs of apes is one of the more terrifying angry mobs you can have.
Yeah, but if they're all apes, it sort of levels the field.
True, but just in terms of visceral thing from the reader.
Here's the thing about the apes. They're not nice. They're selfish. They're petty. They're racist.
They're like humans?
But more so. At least bigger. More outright about it. They don't. There's no passive aggressiveness in the apes. They want theirs and they want it now, and they don't trust those chimps.
So in some ways, they're more honest.
A little bit, yeah. There's something noble about animals in that way. Mm-hmm. They don't beat around the bush. So Punk Rock Jesus number 6 came out, and I had to read 5 and 6 to catch up because I'd missed it somewhere along the line, and I did. And I've actually seen the people saying that this fell off a cliff or it wasn't a good ending. And I don't – this is not going to sound like a compliment, but it kind of is. It gave me a lot to think about.
Interesting.
And I'm very much going over it in my head because it feels like it's very on the nose in the first reading. But that's if you decide that the thoughts of the author are the same as the thoughts of the main character. But – because what you basically have is a 15-year-old punk rock kid who is against religion because of all the stuff that happened. That's the point. He wants to end religion, and he talks a lot of shit about it. Which, and Ron, you tweeted something earlier about teenage angst sounding stupid coming from an adult. and it is, but the thing is, in this book, it doesn't come from an adult. It comes from a 15-year-old who's very smart, which reminds me of every like overly aggressive, you know, 15-year-old punk kid that I met when I was, you know, in college or whatever. And I can't keep that kind of rage up myself anymore, but it made me think about what the point of the story was. Like, is it talking about that sort of energy that comes with youth, and you know, you adopt your personality, and you have a mohawk, or you know, is the author putting himself in those hands, or are we talking about it? It made me think about it a lot. It wasn't as if they were. It wasn't as if I didn't feel as if it was Sean Murphy yelling at me. I felt as if we were looking at, you know, at what it was like for this kid. And then I really, throughout the whole thing, I really liked the character of Thomas.
Well, yeah, he's the real hero.
Exactly. Yeah. And he is not. He has faith. He has, you know, a moral code. He has all this thing. He's not the reactionary character. I really enjoyed, like, sort of learning his origin story. I don't think the art let up the whole way through. I think it was good from start to finish.
Yep.
And while I don't think, I'm not going to go, oh, this was masterful, I will, you know, at the end, I was thinking about it, and I have, you know, it gave me something to chew on,
yeah,
I guess,
from a
storytelling standpoint.
Which is quite insightful, mm-hmm. and I'm impressed by your analysis. That's great. I think ultimately with this last issue, it ended the way it had to end. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't surprised by the ending. I thought, if anything, my opinion still hangs on this, is that I would like to see it colored. Because at times I just think the black and white, I think, you know, I don't get the sense, and maybe I'm wrong, and you've talked to Murphy more than I have. I don't know if he did he originally intend this to be black and white?
I don't know.
Because I get the feeling
I think he knew it was going to be black and white when he did most of it, though.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I don't know. I just feel like his art suffered a little black and white in the size.
I gotta say that I think it worked for it, because if you think about what the deal was with the punk rock and
I get that. I totally get
it. But if there's anybody out there who's gonna be able to do a page that doesn't have color on it, he's gonna be one of the top.
Yeah, no, and I thought about that too. I mean, it would make sense to be a dirty black and white kind of approach to it. But my only complaint is that as a first writer, which we often see, is just that there are pages with lots of dialogue and lots of text, and so you know. But no, all in all, it's good. I mean, it's definitely...
He got stuck in the needed. The sixth issue, actually, as opposed to the other problems we talked about in the other stories, like he had to cram everything in at the end. I think he ran up against the edge and then had to you know, squeeze everything in.
Well, but either way, it's an accomplishment, and he should be proud. So
sure, definitely. Cool. So there.
That's the books. So those are the books that came out this week. If you go look at the top five picks of the weeks, or pick of the past 2 weeks, as chosen by the AI Fanboy community, you'll see that Punk Rock Jesus came in at number five with 3.6% of the pick of the week percentages.
Number six. You said five.
No, it's number five on the top five, issue number six.
Oh, I'm tired.
So number five on the top five list, Punk Rock Jesus, number six. 3.6%. Lots of numbers. Lots of numbers. It's just going to get worse, so hang in there. Number four on the list was Justice League number 15 with 6.1%. Number three was a book that we didn't talk about but I still loved, was Manhattan Project's number eight with 6.1%. It's kind of falling into the zone of it's just not more of the same, but not in a bad way, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, I got you.
Number two was Amazing Spider-Man number 700 with 24% of the pick of the week.
Not everyone hated it.
And the number one book was All New X-Men number 5, 36.2%. Lots of people agreed with me on that one. So
interesting.
Yeah.
You can go to fanboy.com, and where you can make your pick of the week by making your pull list and writing reviews and rating your books. And we'd like to pick out some of the best user reviews and talk about them on the show. The first is from Casey Justice, who reviewed Batman Incorporated number 6 and gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5 and 3.6%. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
So that would put it in the top five as a tie with number Punk Rock Jesus.
Oh, there you go. Tie with Punk Rock Jesus. There you go.
I didn't catch that, but all right.
There
you go. All a little rusty. Casey Justice continues to write in verse, and he says, "Chaos descends on the city with deaths of heroes grim and gritty. You should never fool with Talia al Ghul, or everything will turn out shitty."
You kind of went for the blue at the end of that one, huh?
Yeah. Well, it rhymes.
I tweeted this when I read it, but and I know that he didn't do all the pages in it, but I came for Grant Morrison, and I'm staying for Chris Burnham. I think it's really interesting. I was writing up the best artists of 2012. I just think it's really interesting that he ended up being the guy who made me not miss Frank Quitely. And because of that, and also I found this is like a fun, I like the tone that they strike in this book for whatever reason. I think some of the earlier issues of Batman Incorporated, where they were spending a lot of time in other places with other characters, it wasn't as fun, but this basically reminds me of Batman and Robin again. Where they're sort of hanging around with it's Bruce and the family and Damian.
Well, it's very much Batman and Robin. I mean, I mean, this could almost be like the continuation of what he was doing in Batman and Robin.
It is. Yeah, I mean, it is. Yeah. I think so. And that was good. And I think Burnham has come such a long way. He makes it really good to look at. And his like the storytelling is really fun.
The art change was only for like three or four pages. 13, 14, 15, 13, 14, four pages. Can't do math. And it was really jarring for me. It was really jarring. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a really noticeable change. And odd that it would be like smack in the middle of the story as opposed to the beginning or a flashback or the end or whatever. But hey, they got the book out. So
They're committed to their deadlines. Yeah, you know, so, one way or the other. What are you going to do?
Yep. Cool. So our next review comes from Nindustrial, who reviewed Mara number one, which was another book that came out over the break from Image Comics. It was their lone release between Christmas and New Year's, and gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 2 out of 5, and 0.1% of you made it your pick of the week. And Nindustrial says, and I think that's a merging of Nine Inch Nails, like it's N Industrial, Nin.
Or it's some sort of equation.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, but either way, they say, for an intro issue, I think it does its job. It's well-paced and sets everything up properly. I'm excited to see where the concept goes. All that said, I was not very impressed by the art. Doyle's art isn't problematic in itself, but she frankly does a poor job of conveying action here. Some of her scenes are confusedly drawn as well. They just don't look natural. I only bumped it to a 2 because some of the more static scenes show off her skill, and the cover is really very good. But I hope the art improves next issue, or it's going to become a bit distracting. And unfortunately, I got to agree. Like, I was excited for this. I was curious to see what it would be. I liked the story, but I opened it up, and I was like, oh, I thought this would be better art-wise. So hopefully Ming Doyle can step up a little, because the cover is great. And I've seen her work.
You did some editing of possessive pronouns there.
I did. But
that's okay.
Yeah. Look away. Look at the shiny thing. It kind of came off as kind of like a very Ryan Kelly-esque style, and I've seen her work before, and I think she's really good. I don't know if it's maybe just her and Wood and Jordy Belair getting their footing or whatever, but I'll be curious to see how this goes. So,
a lot of varying opinions in this book. I saw lots of people very vehemently disliking it.
Yeah. So, all right, then. So go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can write reviews of the books you read, as well as rate them and make your picks of the weeks and all that stuff. So go do that. Onto the email. Do you want me to do this long one or Connor?
Please don't make me read this.
I'll do it. All right. Josh F writes in and he says, thank you for the podcast. We're going to skip the whole intro part.
He thanks us.
Yes. All right. So he says, I just finished reading the DC 52 series. I know, a little late on the party, which was an enjoyable few yarns and made use of a lot of B and C listers in a way that really made me care about them and get a sense of the larger DC universe as being so much more than just Gotham and Metropolis. It gave me cause to reflect on all the times you guys have talked about the series and really how unique an approach this was for a mainstream superhero comic in 2006, with a team of writers and artists putting this out, ensemble, cast, weekly soap opera with exactly zero of their high-profile characters. It occurred to me that this was not the only time DC has gone out there and taken a risk on a unique book or publishing approach in the last 10 years or so. You have 52, you have Wednesday Comics, and now the new 52. Regardless of the level of creative or commercial success you might argue for each endeavor, I can't recall seeing quite as much experimentation on a large scale from Marvel during the same time. This strikes me as odd, since Marvel's the publisher with a reputation for being younger, more rebellious, and more likely to push the envelope. While they did kick off the millennium with the Ultimate Marvel line, I feel like we haven't seen some willingness to experiment that DC has shown over the following years. Do you think Marvel's position, being the commercially dominant of the big two publishers, has made them less willing to play with the format? True, we've seen series here and there, the short-lived Next Wave and currently Hawkeye come to mind, but it doesn't seem like it's as high-profile or large-scale as some of the things DC has been trying. So who do you think is the most innovative of the big two, Marvel or DC?
It's an interesting question. I actually really like that question.
I thought you would. I thought it should give some good discussion. Josh, what do you think?
I don't like to say, well, Marvel is this way and DC is this way. Right. That's my caveat. But I feel like historically, Marvel has done most of their envelope pushing not with the format but with the content.
I would concur.
In the way that they treat their characters, what happens to them, the issues that they deal with, the stuff. That's how they do it. And at this point, as a publishing entity, they're smart enough to know what side their bread is buttered on. And they're not going to get that from the only thing that they're willing to do is to push out more comics.
And the thing that my thoughts around it are that they're in a position of being on top, and therefore they are not going to take any risks to question that, to challenge that.
Yeah.
So you're not going to see them change the size of the books or do anything like that or switch to some, you know, any changes they make in that regard are going to be slow and incremental. It's not going to be like, you know, back in the early 2000s when they were not on top anymore and they're like, we'll do a horizontal book and we'll do, you know, like they were trying all crazy shit because they're trying to get attention. Now that they're on top, I feel as if their business people are smart enough to say, okay, we need to keep on what this works. Let's keep on doing it. And let's not change, let's not fuck up the position that we're in. That said, though, you know, I agree with you, Josh, that they're, you know, pushing the envelope on the content, but also I think that they're trying to push the envelope in different ways, like the augmented reality stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're, yeah, you know, like they're taking risks there where it really doesn't hurt their bottom line.
Mm-hmm. If you're in charge and you're number one and you experiment and drop to number two, then you're going to lose your job. So
yeah,
you're not going to play around too much when you're the number one company.
Now, it's interesting that I don't tend to think of DC Comics as being a particularly innovative comic book company, but when you point these things out, it's something. Now for every 52, you get a countdown and you get a, what was that other one, Trinity?
Yeah, but that was, you know, them trying to replicate.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, 52 was
ballsy and great, and we loved it, and for all the reasons that he said and stuff like that, but I haven't really seen them, other than the new 52, I haven't seen them do that again, you know?
Well, he brought up Wednesday Comics. That was more of a special project,
yeah,
which had more to do with, you know, the editor on it, basically.
Yeah, that was like, a vanity project at best.
You know, but they've got, you know,
it's still a thing you'd never see from Marvel.
True.
Yes, but except...
Well, what about Strange Tales?
I was going to say...
It's not a weekly newspaper size,
yeah,
comic.
Yeah, right.
You're not going to see that.
But even that, you know, Strange Tales really... I hate saying this, but Strange Tales is more about the creator, and I feel like right now that Marvel's taking the creator more seriously, at least who they have in charge of their things. 52 is a bit of alchemy, really, the first one. Like, I remember, you know, for the first quarter or third of it, we were like, I don't know about this. And then it won us over.
Yeah,
by being really good and coming together in a way that no one expected. I don't think the people involved with it expected. The new 52, it's funny because the people who are in charge of DC at this point, you know, or at least, you know, the editor and a lot of the editors, editor-in-chief and a lot of the editors now are the people from Marvel in the early 90s where they were doing new things, you know, and then when they worked, they just flogged the shit out of them,
yeah.
Which is kind of what we're seeing. It's interesting. There's no answer. But it's something to think about and sort of go over. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that it's a question because I don't think the market is in a place where anybody can comfortably take those kind of risks anymore. I think,
you know, what's interesting is that, yeah, 2006, different people in charge at DC and is a different market,
yeah,
than it is right now. Because right now, DC's problem is that they are incredibly static.
Yeah.
So, you know, take that as you will. And I think you're right, though.
Yeah. Interesting.
That work?
Interesting question. Yeah, very interesting. That's,
thank you. That, yeah, really made us think.
Really good.
Appreciate that.
Cool. So we got another email from...
I blacked out. What happened?
We got another email from Andrew, Andrew H., who wrote in responding to an earlier episode 363, when we were talking about Wolverine in the X-Men cartoon in the 80s. Yeah. And he says, I wanted to correct you about a point you made in episode 363. You mentioned the Australian accent used by Wolverine in Pride of the X-Men and said that it was because someone didn't know what they were doing. Not true. There's a coffee table book about the history of the X-Men publications I read that says that Wolverine was intentionally given an Australian accent because at the time they were exploring doing a Wolverine movie set in Australia. That movie never got made, but they wanted to tie Pride of the X-Men into it.
Which is also someone not know what they're doing.
I don't want to be pedantic here, but his email address is very Star Trek influenced. And I'm just saying, if I was William Shatner, I would yell at you right now.
I love the idea that is written in a book somewhere.
Some guy's like, I got this. This is gold. There's only a few people who picked up on it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know that Andrew trots this out a lot.
Yeah. So.
Well, actually.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Andrew, for writing in. Always good to hear from you.
It's, you know what? I'm glad to know that.
Yes. Email us at contact@ifanboy.com. On to our voicemails. A question we've answered before, but we'll answer it again for you.
Hey guys, this is Ian from Crete, and I'm trying to think of comic book superheroes that are married, because it seems like everybody that was married got separated in some sort of reboot. And so beyond Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Woman, and Northstar and his husband. I can't think of any married couples. Love what you guys do on the show, and I'll talk to you guys never, probably, which is sad. Okay, bye.
I know that the audio quality. Did he say he was from Crete?
That's what it sounded like.
Greek island?
That's our first Crete call.
I feel like there should be rioting in the background. Yeah, that's all I.
I know. I picture he's on an amazing beach and he's got barely any. You know, they'll be rioting across the horizon. Sure.
Yeah.
But
just eating stuff out of leaves.
Yeah, just grape leaves everywhere.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the classic question about marriage in comics, and why does comics hate marriage?
Not comics, fiction.
Fiction. Do you think fiction?
Serialized fiction.
Yeah?
Yes. Yeah, it limits the amount of stories you can tell. Yep. We have this is actually discussed quite a bit in the Marvel Untold Storybook about how they screwed up all the characters by marrying them off as the writers got older and wanted to write about marriage.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what happens when you've got a bunch of characters who you have to tell stories about weekly or monthly forever. When you cut off the romantic aspect of their lives, you
the
cut
tension,
off
yeah,
the story
yeah.
you can tell.
It's not, well, it's not interesting to argue over putting the seat down.
Yeah,
well, it depends.
No, it's definitely not interesting.
Ask Judd Apatow.
But that said, you know, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones—that's a couple that he didn't mention that are married.
Yeah,
and,
but they're not.
Know.
They're not. You know, they're not forefront. Well,
and they've also just been taken off the board. So,
yeah.
Right, that's true.
But everyone says it's just Reed and Sue, and that's it, and that's all that's left. Or now Northstar and what his boyfriend's name.
There will be some married characters, but for the most part, I mean, Reed and Sue are supposed to. I mean, that's part of their particular story,
the first family.
And I think even Jessica and Luke Cage, to a certain extent, fall in that same category. Whereas the story's about their relationship, but really,
what's the most interesting story about Sue Storm? Namor.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. I mean, and that's, you know, like it's funny. It's funny because once you give the character what they want, then they don't have a thing to strive for. And then the only other way to get them out of that is to make them have some sort of infidelity. And that paints them usually negatively.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that they were talking about having Peter get divorced from Mary Jane way back in the Clone Saga. I mean, they knew.
Yeah.
You can't have a story about a main character like that and tell as interesting stories if they're not completely free.
Yeah.
That's not life, but it's storytelling. It's fiction.
Well, somebody at some point went, you know, there'd be a lot of tension in a marriage if one of them was a superhero. And they were like, yeah, it would be. Let's do that. And then that's the only story.
Yeah.
And it just feels like everything. It feels like our real lives.
Well, I've read in interviews, they said it. They were all guys who were older and they were married and they
wrote about what related to them, yeah.
They wrote about what they knew, not being single, but being married to a supermodel, and you know, that's what they did, and they did it, and they screwed it up. So, just the way it is.
Yep. So, if you have any questions about the way it is, you can email us at 188fanboys. It's 188-326-2697.
Some things will never change.
So you can, if you like podcasts and you want to listen to more,
I got you.
You did. You son of a bitch. But anyway, so if you want to listen to other podcasts, you can tune into iFanboy Don't Miss, which makes its triumphant return this coming Monday when Paul Montgomery talks to Brian Wood about his upcoming Star Wars book at Dark Horse. So go to iFanboy.com on Monday or go to iTunes and subscribe to Don't Miss and check it out.
Yeah.
When do we take this out of the script?
The thing is, the line says make comics, and I'm like, what do I do about this? Is Ron going to say something? No.
Listen, sometimes you do a make comics podcast.
I never promised anybody anything.
All right, Kermit. All right.
I got some.
All right, then, moving on.
Is it coming out, or is there any update, or what?
Will there be more at any point?
Are you planning on more?
There will be some more.
Okay, that's all we need to know. You can subscribe to it on iTunes. So you don't miss it. There you go. All right.
Well, last week on
this next thing?
Last week, you'll notice there was no Pick of the Week podcast. Instead, we had the All Media Year End Roundup show, which we always love doing. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that or somehow missed it, you can go back and you can find that on the feed behind this show or on the website or wherever you find our podcast. But that was always a lot of fun. It's about 2 hours and 20 minutes of us talking about TV and movies and film and podcasts and video games and music and comics and all the books and all the kinds of stuff that we like to do when we're not doing iFanboy. So I enjoyed it.
We should do an update.
Oh, yeah.
We should do an update.
Ratings. Hobbits. Ratings.
All right. Quick update. Hobbit. Ratings. Ratings. Ratings.
C.
B.
Doing letters?
Yeah.
B.
Yep. I think we're all in agreement about The Hobbit, that it was good. It just felt stretched and long. And
I can watch Ian McKellen do that. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, like my whole thing is like no movies look like The Hobbit. And so like I'm fine revisiting that world for hours. I don't care.
Here's the thing. I went and watched Lord of the Rings over the break.
Yeah, I know.
All three.
I know.
It really it was like watching The Dark Knight after watching The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah. Yeah, really? Or it was like reading The Dark Knight Returns, or Strikes Back after reading Dark Knight Returns. I get that and I see it, but I still enjoyed it. I don't know. It was fine. Yeah. It was fine.
It was fine.
And I'm totally in the minority in that I did not mind. In fact, I kind of liked the 48 FPS, but I think I'm just being contrarian.
So. I didn't see it that way, so it looked exactly the same to me.
Yeah. So, all right, Django. Am I the only one who saw Django?
A+. It tied with Argo for me.
Yeah. Oh my God, it was amazing. It was great. Yeah. Connor, have you seen it yet? Or no. Oh, you got to see it. I thought I was a little skeptical going into it because I didn't quite understand. I like Christoph Waltz, but everything I've seen from him after Inglourious Basterds has kind of left me. They weren't as good as Inglourious Basterds. I wasn't
what
sure
happened
how,
is,
how he'd
is
fit
Quentin
in.
Quentin Tarantino said, "I'm really sorry that you had to win an Oscar for playing an absolute Nazi shit before.
Yeah, so
we're gonna make you a great guy,
an awesome guy. Yeah, and I was a little skeptical about the length, but I never looked at my watch once.
Never felt it.
It was great. So yeah,
A plus.
Anything else?
I saw Les Mis. I gave it a B+.
Oh, any commentary?
It was done in opera style, so there was hardly any non-singing, and which was fine once you got used to it. And then Tom Hopper shot the film worked really well in some scenes and not so well in other scenes. He used these extreme close-up fisheye lenses on some of the singing, and which when the really powerful emotional songs worked really well, some of the other ones didn't quite work as well. But
is that's Hooper, the guy who did John Adams,
yeah.
And The King's Speech.
Yes.
Okay.
I did see On the Road, which I wish I hadn't.
I saw Safety Not Guaranteed, which you like.
Well, I went on the road. I gave On the Road like a C, but basically it was just uninspired and predictable. As a Kerouac fan, I was disappointed. So, did you like Safety Not Guaranteed?
I did. I actually did.
Wasn't it good? It was charming, right?
Yeah. It was, and it was a good ending.
Yeah.
I thought.
Yeah,
it's like I didn't know what was.
Oh, and I also saw Seeking a Friend for the End of the World on the plane, which was really good. The Steve Carell, Keira Knightley, I really enjoyed it.
Yes, I meant to see that. Yeah. I had a whole plan to see a bunch of films.
Yeah,
and then I got the
guys.
Flu.
Yeah,
I know.
What?
I watched an episode of New Girl.
Oh yeah.
And Olivia Munn was a stripper on it,
yeah,
and it was a very good TV show.
Yeah, see,
I don't as far as
the
that
holiday
goes,
episode where they went to all the parties, or was the one that
I guess so.
At the bar, yeah,
that was a good episode. That was very fun. That was a good episode.
Yeah, I laughed at one point. Lindsay looked at me because she was watching.
Oh, and I read a book. I read a book in 3 days.
A whole book in
3 or 4 days. I read Ready Player One, which was fucking awesome. And Josh, Connor, I don't know about you, but Josh, I strongly recommend you read it.
What is that?
It's called Ready Player One.
People are going to ask that we do this every week.
I know. Yeah, we can't.
Somebody asked, like, why do you only do it once a year? It's like, it takes that long to watch all the shit.
Yeah, exactly.
I read Marvel Comics history in about 2 days.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can't stop reading it.
You can't. You can't put it down. Yeah. So.
Oh, so good.
Good stuff. All right. Well, who knows how long the show is. Go to ifanboy.com where you can read my Pick of the Week review as well as all the other great articles that are up. We did our Best of 2012 wrap up over the past 2 weeks, and honestly, I think it was our best year yet. It was our best of year yet. So you can go to ifanboy.com and you can get all that there, and go to twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy where you won't miss a thing.
And I don't want to miss a thing.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
That's what I'm going to keep doing that.
Yeah.
All day, Ron.
Yep.
Day's almost over. You can email us. I can't believe I did that. And it's recorded.
And
you can email us
out,
a contact
too. It's
at
iFanboy. Out of the show.
No, I know. I'm not asking it to. I didn't really put my all into it. I'm not a karaoke guy. Contact at iFanboy.com. Just get off my back about Make Comics. That's what I just – or voicemail, 888-FANBOYS, 326-26. Just calm down, 2697, with any of your questions.
I'm already thinking of putting that on a loop. That's running in the back of the whole show.
That'll be what people hear when I text you.
Finally, if you like the show or you like Don't Miss or – even Make Comics. I don't know who you
don't
would.
Don't want to close my eyes.
Oh, stop,
you
please.
You can iTunes.
Don't want to fall asleep. I still miss you, babe.
I can't even continue.
Josh, you are this close.
You're on thin ice, mister.
You're going to have a beating.
Connor?
Just me and Ron.
Please finish the copy.
I said I can't finish it.
Was that in Pearl Harbor?
That's what I'm going to hear in my head.
All right, then.
Miss you, babe.
Until next week, I'm Ron. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.